This is Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, and this is KBOO Portland.
Hello, my name is TK Kapurai, and I'm an immigrant from Zimbabwe. I'm the host of The Global Cell, which airs live in the air room the first Wednesday of the month at 7 p.m. I host immigrants and refugees from various global spots. I like to bring out their lived experiences so the world can know something about them. I like to bring a lot through my guests so we may have diverse experiences, cultures, foods, music, interests, and anything on the platform. We can share and learn a lot through their live instructions. Let's do this together, not only for a better platform for our community, but a better community for our platform. Again, tune in for my show, The Global Cell, live in the air room, the first Wednesday of the month at 7 p.m. here on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and also available on the web at kboo.fm.
Bring You the Healing Project, a multimedia installation that features personal stories from those who are incarcerated and highlights the deep trauma that imprisonment has had on their lives and their loved ones. When you walk into the Healing Project at Yerba Buena Center for the Arts in San Francisco, you see a piano centered in the middle of a huge space, connected to three smaller rooms. There's sound coming from every direction. People's voices talking about their life experiences with prisons. There's an altar against one wall, draped with prayer beads, white candles, dried flowers, and bottles of alcohol. Above it is a mural of a person crowned with flowers, their faces in a silhouette, but somehow feels like you can look into their eyes.
Welcome to the Healing Project. This is basically just the title wall. Obviously, for like any type of exhibition you have, the title wall, which is like an introduction context for people to understand what they're going to experience. And so we wanted to try to write it like from a personal perspective. So all this language here is just basically from my artist statement of like trying to explain why I tried to create the project and what's inside of it. Obviously, the heart of the project is in the interviews, some of which you'll hear, that we did across the country with folks who have experienced structural violence from a series of different contexts, talking to them about what they went through, but also about the healing practices. And it's like a combination, like sound visuality, language. We're trying to kind of basically cover all the bases. So these right here at the beginning, these are tapes that have short interviews on them from different folks that are incarcerated.
That's Amora Penderhughes, the Bay Area-raised composer, pianist, singer, and activist. He has spent the past 8 years exploring structures of systemic racism, specifically how many families navigate the daily realities of state violence and the systems of detention and incarceration in the United States. He comes from a family with a long history of social and racial justice activism. His father, Howard Penderhughes, was an organizer in the anti-apartheid movement as a student at UC Berkeley. He later went on to work with violence prevention organizations and is an active member of the Brotherhood of Elders Network. His mother, Raquel Penderhughes, is also an activist. Fighting for environmental and racial justice, supporting solidarity movements in Latin America, and creating programs to support incarcerated youth and adults while also fighting to abolish the prison industrial complex. Penderhughes follows in his parents' footsteps. He wants the Healing Project to lift up the voices of those who have been locked up and silenced, to not only show the world that this flawed system should be abolished, but to also show support for people who've experienced structural violence.
Telling the truths about the violences of the current system and the true need to basically eradicate it, not to reform it, and being like super honest about how it affects people. And then on the other side, actually showing what type of other world is possible and what people actually need in their day-to-day if they're gonna actually be the healthiest versions of themselves. The piece that I always talk about first or think about first is a piece that is narrated and spoken by my brother Keith Lamar, who's incarcerated in Ohio on death row. And it's called Sweet. And it's basically like a piece where he discusses his experience, not just being incarcerated, but even growing up previous to that as a very young person, because he was incarcerated very young. But basically the thesis of it is he's talking about the thing that he's the most proud of throughout his whole time of his life is that he's maintained and held on to his sweetness, because every level from his childhood and growing up in this country to, obviously being incarcerated, everything is designed to rob him of that sweetness and to kind of make him unfeeling, make him like hard and all this stuff. And he's just like, I always hold on to that sweet part of myself. And then he talks about also the people around him that help him maintain that and support that part of him. And I love that because, obviously, number one, I really believe in that so much, and that we all need to hold on to that and be able to hold on to that. But also because I think it directly contradicts the image that one wants to paint of somebody on death row.
Penderhughes walks me to a room with words on the wall that read, "They chew you up, swallow you." Audio is playing of a man named Keith Lamar describing how he holds on to his humanity despite being incarcerated.
I mean, one of the things that I'm surprised about, and my friends tell me this, people who that really know me, it's kind of still kind of surprising to me. I'm sweet, man. I love being sweet to my friends, and when I was younger, when I was growing up, that wasn't cool to be sweet. I remember the little sweet little boy I was, and by sweet, I mean, I just like to make connection with people. I like that tenderness, the human thing, to connect with people on. But this situation, when we talk about the criminal justice system, really what it is a digestive system. A digestive tract. They chew you up with that education.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
They chew you up with that education, swallow you, and, you go in the stomach, the large, small intestines, and then you come out and have a piece of it. So one of the things I've been kind of most amazed about myself that I've been able to hold on to my sweetness, my sense of, that's one of the things I most like about myself. But the only people that are really close to me that kind of know, because you have to have the opportunity to, I'm sweet to myself as well. I'm good to myself. even after all I've been through. And, you know, that's one of the things that I want people to know, that even in, like, even if your worst fears come true, you know, nothing, you know, but death itself can rob you of who you really are. You know, like, you know, I can be myself, you know, God gave me, understand. One of my close friends told me a long time ago, he said, you know, Bomani, life can be had no matter where you are. Mm. You can still laugh in prison. You can still cry in prison. You can still, you know, be who you are, where you are. Yeah. That's what I think I'm most proud about. And everything that I've accomplished, man, is that I've been able to hold on to that, you know, sense of sweetness in myself. Yeah.
Keith Lamar was sentenced to prison at the age of 19 for murder. He has spent over 30 years in prison, most of it in solitary confinement. The Healing Project forces us to acknowledge the deep problems in America's so-called system of corrections and rehabilitation. Penderhughes exposes the system's focus on forced servitude, imprisonment and punishment, and its failure to consider the futures of those re-entering society and the impacts on their families and communities.
A prison is like, I mean, it's like an embassy. That's the only way I can think of it. It's like they don't have to follow the rules of the governing land. You know what I'm saying? They just have their own policies, and there's no one there to say it's not okay.
I think that, you know, so much of what happens in prison is conditioning, right? Conditioning to see oneself as inferior. Conditioning to break people. Conditioning to try to have people be less of themselves, right? And I'm very intentional and very habitual about this for myself, that I refuse to walk with my head down. I refuse not to look somebody in the eye. and when I see somebody do that, you know, I definitely pointed out to them, like, not heads up.
You know, so it's kind of like, you know, there's nothing good that's going to come out of this situation except for me leaving this place. Titles like inmate, convict, ex-felon, they're demeaning titles. They're put in place to diminish self-respect and dignity, and to demean you and your character and break your spirit. And I believe this is all connected with the billion-dollar industrial prison complex.
How do we capture? They have conferences where they get together and they think really hard about how to make a better cage. And then they sell their products to them and they implement it on us.
Thank you for using GTL.
The Healing Project is a haunting tapestry of instrumentation and stories about the cruel nature of prison. Each interviewee offers truth and vulnerability about their experiences in hopes of expressing their pain and bringing attention to the inhumane realities of prison. The Healing Project shows the deep trauma that the prison system causes for families and the long journey of healing that must take place. Walking through the exhibition, I enter a dark grayish room with images of men and women being projected off the wall, recorded voices of people talking about the challenges that come after incarceration.
This is why I need to try to get my record expunged, man, because I'm always facing these barriers, you know, especially if I'm trying to get some property, I'm trying to do something like that. I'm always facing barriers, you know, so, you know, I still feel that pain. You know, or being disenfranchised, man, being civilly dead.
No one wants to give you a home. No one wants to give you a place to stay because they think or feel you're going to be a problem just because you've been in jail and prison. You're going to have the wrong people. You're going to have too much coming in or out there. You know, these are all the assumptions that they make up. Yeah, about people that's been in prison, when really all we want to do is get a place to stay, get some stability, and get on with our lives. But it's hard to, and since I know what that mentality and mindset is.
Nobody wants to stay in this penitentiary.
Thank you.
Now I'm in a blue-lit room. I can hear interviewees talking about the psychological warfare of prison and the trauma they experienced.
It's basically like a mixtape. So, like, I took all the interviews, cut them up, brought them to different producers, and then I basically, like, made a few different pieces with each of the producers. So there's, it's like, each of the pieces are about 5 minutes, 3 to 5 minutes, and they're on loop. So it's basically like, if you stay for however long you stay, you're getting that amount. But if you were to come in at a different time, you might hear something totally different, you know?
Civilized people don't live like this. This is the way animals live. This is animals. I'm not an animal. I'm not an animal. I'm not an animal. A prison is like, I mean, it's like an embassy. That's the only way I can think of it. It's like they don't have to follow the rules of the governing land. You know what I'm saying? They just have their own, they just have their own policies, and there's no one there to say it's not okay. So you can buck against the system, but they've got it in place. I mean, it's literally just like slavery. You can run, but if we catch your ass, this was going to happen. So they let you see the folks who kick up against, you know what I'm saying, the system, and they parade them around, handcuffed, new dummy box, little spit mask on, just, whew. It's psychological warfare. And this bottom line is what it is. It's psychological warfare. And it has broken many people.
Sitting in the blue room, feeling the vibration of the woofers strategically planted underneath the bench, you cannot escape the raw and painful stories of people who could be your brother, your student, your neighbor, your friend, or even you.
If a person is coming in here that's 15, they have to hear that they
have to resonate
with.
Yeah, yeah.
But then also we have strings. And we have, like, if a person comes in that's 60, it's going to be something for them too, you know? All original production music from, like, me and, like, 20 other cats, like, all around New York. And then we mixed it specifically for surround sound for the space. So there's different parts of it coming out of every speaker.
Right. I saw this in the walk, I said, okay, I know.
Maximum impact.
Yeah,
maximum impact.
Many people who enter the carceral system bring a series of traumatic experiences with them, including a lifetime of dealing with micro and macro level racism and oppression. Incarceration only adds to the trauma, which is oftentimes generational.
I've been into every prison in California and out. Behind my father. Like, I kind of grew up in the prisons, like, where the prison guards kind of knew me and my mom. My dad wrote me letters since I was born, and he would always open the letter with the same,
Same phrase.
You know, and I never wrote back because I was a kid. So I just expected my dad to write these letters, and he always did. He always remembered my birthday. He always remembered any dates that were important. He was good with dates. So he would write and say, oh yeah, you did this today. That's the relationship I had with him. And just all in my head, I had this fantasy about what I wanted him to be to me. And he just never could. You know, I seen my dad 10 months clean before he died. And I hurried up and went and took photographs. You know, he wasn't there for me or my sister when we were born, but he got to see Eric born with me. You know, he got to see my son.
These transparent conversations have similar heartbreaking themes. Families torn apart and lost time. One part of the project is made up of over 100 powerful testimonies and an LP titled Grief, created by those who've been locked up. Pender Hughes has put these interviews together with songs. I sat with him to talk more about the messages in the music. He told me about one song in particular that best describes the project, titled Process.
I would say probably Process. You know, I would say that that song definitely builds it, because I think that that song represents this idea that, you know, the key to moving through all of this in real time is understanding that we're not going to get through it tomorrow. It's not going to get better tomorrow. That's just the reality. So in that context, we do the best we can, and we also, we recalibrate our expectations of what healing looks like, that it is not like a competitive triumph over one's demons or whatever one's going through. It's trying every day to make it a little bit better. And it's trying every day to extend extend grace to yourself in the way that you would to a person that you love, you know? And I think that that's a very important part for those that are going through those things. And that is, at the end of the day, what the project is made for. I want everyone to experience it, but the project is made for those that's going through the things.
There's some things that I don't want to admit, so I try not to think about it. So there's a lot of ugly things in my heart. I just hope to the Lord I don't slip. You feel me? So there's some things that I don't want to admit, so I try not to think about it. There's a lot of ugly things in my heart. I just hope to the Lord I don't slip. I wonder what it's like to let it out, that part of me that I'm so afraid. It holds on me and tosses me about. Doesn't seem to be something I get away from. Tell me, how do you name those well-kept secrets that you never say out loud? And why does the body see these demons but keep me from calling out? I guess I'll just say it's a process, one day at a time.
Pender Hughes highlights the harsh realities of the prison system, the traumatic experiences it causes for entire families, and the difficult long road to healing. He knows that the songs in the Healing Project are intense. He's pushing his audience to connect with those who are unseen and feel their undeniable pain and sorrow.
So there's a whole entire world that I've created in my mind, and it's so much.
The Healing Project is asking, how do we survive America? What does it mean to maintain one's humanity while dealing with the trauma of relentless systemic racism?
I don't really believe that true healing can exist in this type of capitalist society, because the whole society is built on exploitation. So it does not exist without exploitation. There's no way for it to exist. And that's another function of the prison, is that the prison is where we put all the people that would show us how much society has failed. You know, it's like, you don't want to look at how this capitalist system has created a problem with so many people being unhoused, or has created the problem with so many people losing their mortgage, or so many people, you know, not being able to have a job. It's like, y'all did this, but you don't want to look at it. So then you're going to take everybody and put them and lock them up, you know?
Pender Hughes believes that it's possible to support alternatives to our draconian prison system, while also recognizing that people are complicated.
I definitely try to be very conscious of saying this project is not a project about innocence. Like, a lot of the people that are a part of the project have done different things, you know? But they're also some of the kindest, most brilliant, most loving individuals I've ever met. And when you get deep into them dealing with and talking about why those things happen and where they are now, number one, they're actually evidence of what a real process of accountability can look like, because they've actually moved through these processes in a way that few of us have. And definitely not because the prison did that for them, but because they did it themselves in spite of their conditions.
In The Healing Project, Penderhue shines a light on the fact that true rehabilitation and healing cannot happen within systems built to enforce oppression and structural racism. He puts faces, voices, and humanity to people behind bars. He wants to see systemic change and stop the cycles of increased trauma and harm. His vision for the future is filled with hope for stronger organizing efforts to dismantle the prison industrial complex. He puts this energy into his music.
Hope, I wrote, I think that was the last song I wrote for the record, and it was something I wanted to represent of, like, I often get a, you know, I often get response from people of like, oh man, your work is like so dark, it's so like heavy and whatever, and I'm like, yeah, well, that's what I'm thinking about. But so I kind of titled it that, like, as a kind of a cheeky thing, like, hey, well, here you go. But, you know, obviously it's not like a purely happy-go-lucky song, but to me it does represent what hope means to me, which, as I said, hope is a discipline. And I think for me it represents this era of, you know, for some people the things that are going on is not a reality we can check in and out of. But I think for a lot of other folks, you know, a lot of white folks, a lot of rich folks, a lot of different people, you know, you can check in and out of the fight depending on when it's comfortable for you to be there and how you feel about, you know, how guilty are you today? That's going to make determine whether you would participate or not. And so I wanted to do a song that challenged that and said, like, you know, you can't just, if you really want to represent hope, you can't just say, oh, hope means I just gonna hope it gets better. No, you have to participate, and you have to realize that it's not gonna just go away because you wish it away. It's only gonna go away if we organize.
You told me the war is over, while everything's for sale, it's all in a good performance. Yes, you pretend to care, hide the weapons, it's all for the crowd. You wanna believe so badly that everything was safe. Don't nobody lose a fortune, it works for you. It's awfully loud in here, 'cause Jesse still owes his rent now, and Bree is working for 500 cents, and she is still calling collect now. Can't believe in what you say when I see this, can't believe in all the words of the preachers, when your whole existence is illegal, while we watch all the blood of the people.
One of the most powerful things about the Healing Project is the community of creators that have created it with me. It's almost 100 different people, between folks who are narrators who have shared their stories, visual creators, artwork, music. And this is very much of a collective project. And the best part of it, I think, is that hopefully when people step into the space, whether it's digitally, whether it's physically, they will feel that collective notion. They'll feel that thing of, this is a group of folks that have come together to try to really almost create an artistic rendition of them being around a dinner table talking to each other about these things, but from all around the country. And my hope is that when people will step into it, they will feel like they need to give themselves into that. You know, I don't want them to think, oh, I'm gonna take something away. I want them to give themselves to it, you know? So that's my hope for how people will approach it. And I would say the other secondary one would just be, I think the other powerful thing about it is the practical tools that people can get away from it. If they're really listening to the pieces in the sound room, I really believe that people will be able to have physical, practical tools that they can take away for when they go through grieving process, when they're dealing with something that's really hard, when they've experienced, you know, some type of trauma and they're trying to heal from it, they'll have practical things they can do.
This project functions as an abolitionist narrative. It calls for an end to the current prison system. It urges us to create new ways of addressing conflict and processes that are more humane. In October of 2022, Tamora Pender Hughes was awarded a $1 million grant from the Mellon Foundation in further support of the Healing Project. Funding will go towards the expansion of artworks in the Healing Project exhibition, the creation of a book, free community programs, and the creation of new content. The grant also provides the initial funding for the Healing Project Transformative Impact Fund, which will offer seed money and mentorship for selected interviewees who are currently or formerly incarcerated to work on their own special projects. All work is based on the premise that the deepest healing strategies come directly from those who have been traumatized and oppressed.
Yes, you pretend to care, hide the weapons, it's all for the crowd. You wanna believe so badly that everything was safe. Don't nobody lose a fortune, it works for you. It's awfully loud in here.
Bienvenidos y bienvenidas. Welcome to PNA Poor People's Revolutionary Radio. This is your co-host Muteado Silencio con Voces de Migrantes en Resistencia with you Pabri Scala Tiburcio Garcia and Pabri Scala Popoe Micanala Tiny. And from Worcester Commons, Lamonte 4.
From the Monte Lands to Coast Miwok to Uchun, from Philly to San Rafael to right here in the town. That's Oakland. This is your special cohort, Lamonte Ford, formerly unhoused resident of Wood Street Commons, here today with my Homefulness Poor Magazine family. And on today's broadcast of Poor People's Radio, we will talk with comrades from Poor People's Army in Philly, aka Lenape Lands. Robbie Powelson from so-called San Rafael, Warrior for Houseless Relatives.
This is PNN, not CNN. Thank you to another day of unpimped, unbought, unplayed, and unsold Poor People's Radio. Welcome to Mama Earth Day, because Paula Tricksters want to sweep us all away. Welcome to Mama Earth Day, because we houseless peoples are hurt first and worst in climate terrorism every day. Sweep the courts like they do to us, because there's no more room under the bus. And that's no place for any of us. So how about house keys, not handcuffs, and sanctuaries, not sweeps? How about no more of us need to live on these occupied streets? So yeah, we are blessed to be here on the small part of unceded Ohlone Lashon territory, standing in solidarity and warriorship with our First Nations relatives, because we know that not only are these sweeps killing us houseless people, but they're the same trajectory of genocide that removed the first peoples from this land. I'm blessed to be with my brother Muteado Silencio, co-founder and worker and warrior poet at Homefulness and teacher, as well as Lamonte Ford, also here, family from Wood Street Commons, which are one of our powerful family members in this liberation of Mama Earth. That said, I'm really excited to bring up our guest who's here all the way from occupied Lenape lands, Philly, the streets of North Philly. Galen, welcome back to Poor People's Radio.
Thank you so much, Tiny. It's always a pleasure. You know, the energy that's going on with the work that y'all doing out there on the West Coast, and in particular, you know what I mean, with Poor People's Magazine and Poor People's Radio, keeps giving us inspiration when we showing different members around here on the East Coast what they can do if they start working together in unity and start basing a lot of things on a lot of truths.
Right now, we in the reign of the Orange Cracker King. Oh my God. Can you tell listeners, because you know, it's a war out here. It doesn't stop. Every day, every damn day, they coming for us with this sweeps violence ever since Grants Pass versus Johnson. But I know that, you know, it's the same thing for y'all. And I know that you've done some powerful work like reclaiming homes, taking back these abandoned, hoarded, so-called properties. And I also know that you're doing some resistance work, like getting a spot for yourselves. So maybe you could just start by what the climate in Lenape land, so-called Philly, what's going on out there right now with your folks?
It's pretty much the same that's going on, you know what I mean, where brown folks are everywhere. And particularly, I'm going to a lot of the restaurants, the car washes, and different neighborhoods. It's just horrible because they're just picking and choosing. One day we're just going to snatch up some people and you might not hear from them again. And so we've been having people from all different parts of Latin America, as well as places that you wouldn't even think of. People that have been living here, been citizens, been here for a couple of decades, have been snatched up. Good friends of ours that were Turkish. And so we just see them just opening the door up when they just snatching people's rights, kidnapping them, taking them and not allowing them to be able to have contact with family, relatives, or anything like that. We're just seeing that they're just moving towards this really, truly fascist system that has no shame. We always knew that they didn't have any shame in the way they acted, but they always tried to do it in some sneaky, conniving way. Now they're just straight up in our face, just saying, either we have to put up some resistance, or these are the things that are just going to continue to happen to your people. And so we've been trying to put pressure on a lot of the faith community here as a sanctuary city, trying to ensure that different people, different families that we think that are possibly under attack, you know, try to find some sanctuary with them. And so we've been working real closely with the new sanctuary movement out here and trying to educate people, get all the documents, put things in line, making sure that they got contact people, and try to always be together with someone, because here in Philly, it's kind of tricky because of the neighborhoods and the community. It's so mixed and blended that sometimes they just pick and choose. And you'd be like, on a Tuesday and Thursday, then you hear about the next day in the paper, someone, loved one, who's an American citizen, being snatched up by ICE.
First of all, thank you for doing that work. And we know that so many of our warriors are not only being harassed, not only being constantly threatened by this violent system, but also those are our folks. Those are the folks that walk with us in marches for poor folks' rights, in the kitchens, taking care of folks' babies, taking care of people's communities. You know, they're going to try to take us all? Is that what they're doing?
Because people know when you knock the bottom out of something, what's above it falls down. And I think that's what they're doing. They're setting it up where they're going to be able to just do what they want to any and everybody that they choose to. Once they go for one group, they're going to go to the next group and then the next group. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to link up right now. That's why we love the work that you're doing out there, Tiny, the radio, being out there to get this message out there, because time is running short. We really got to start working together. We see it ourselves. It's reality today. They're coming for us and our loved ones. And the only recourse is us coming together. People are quick right now to want to do something just because they don't see no future. And when you have kids and you don't see no future, people want to get active. And we're just trying to not let them get active in the wrong thing. We want them to be set up with some people that are really about building an army, a nonviolent army that's made of people from the Poor People's Army that's going to try to figure out how to keep people alive, as well as try to build towards an economy and a society for the masses of us.
What's on the horizon for you guys?
You know, we have this book, our first book. We have a couple on the horizon. But the first one we have out right now is called Takeover, A Human Rights Approach to Housing. And it goes into detail and the process on how you take over these houses and house the unhoused. We've been doing it for over 30, 40 years. And we came up with a method to it that allows people to be able to buy time and help families survive. You know what I mean? Another day and another day.
And that's called Takeover.
Yeah, it's called Takeover.
Where can folks get a copy of the book and support the work that y'all doing right now?
You can go to poorpeoplespress.com, okay, or you can go to poorpeoplesarmy.org.
You heard it, poorpeoplesarmy.org, poorpeoplespress.com. Talk to you real soon.
All right, no doubt.
We have the blessing of having our beautiful brother, Lamonte Ford, here as our special co-host.
How are you guys doing?
All right. Monty, maybe you could start by just, for folks who don't know what Wood Street Commons even is, because we have listeners all over the world, why don't you tell them a little history and your relationship to that history?
Okay. First, I'd like to say no barriers, bricks, or borders. United, we all stand. Wood Street Commons was life for me. You know, I lost a lot of family members in the same month, same year, and I took to suicide. Instead of that, I found this community that was thriving, a place for me to thrive, a place for me to be, you know, without judgment, without discrimination. I just felt welcome there. And so I met and grew up with a new lease of life. Okay. So now what we're doing is we're still trying to stand up for our fallen family members that are still out there, that are suffering, going through this violent takeover, if you will, because it is war. We are really dying out there. Right. The power is in their hands, but we've got the people. The people are going to survive.
Tell us, Monty, where Wood Street Commons is at now?
Well, right now, we're having town hall meetings every first Saturday of every month. We're doing outreach right now. We're going out to where the people are that are in need, and we're providing the service for them. Mm-hmm. We're trying to fill in the gaps of where the city and the state and federal governments fail to fill. And it is such a pleasure to be able to do that because we know those other entities aren't going to do it.
We're in the streets every day supporting our relatives any damn way, whether that means hygiene supplies, whether that means a tent, whether that means food, whether that means medicine, whether that means navigation of the system. But these people that are paid all this money to pimp us, basically, and make money off our back, oftentimes ain't never missed a meal, as my Mama D would say. Yet they make money managing our poverty. What curls and boils my blood is that when we're on the street every day and we're trying to support folks, it's so hard to get a crumb out of those institutions. We just came off this violent sweep at Mosswood. All the cops, all the non-profiteers with their fake, not really solutions, giving a few people that they picked and choose the extended stay situation. Can you tell listeners about this so-called extended stay?
The extended stay was meant to encapsulate Mosswood and another cabin site that's closing on Wood Street. There's not enough rooms in there to encapsulate all the folk.
And then, like, that's not enough. You might think, oh, extended stay, we're going to be laying up in there.
Not at all. They've removed all of the amenities from the extended stay. There's no phones, there's no refrigerators, there's no microwaves, no type of way to cook. I mean, that's setting up people for failure, if you ask me.
A sister princess who had the blessing of speaking to, who was one of the residents of Mosswood, facing immediate eviction, where she had to get all her life's belongings in like 10 minutes where the cops was going to arrest her. Just hold that in your heart. This is an elder. The way she looked at it was, it's an internment camp. She's terrified to go there.
Well, that's what they're doing already. They're just trying to warm us up to the idea. But, you know, we at Wood Street Commons and Po Folks, we know We understand. We're getting prepared. We're not going to fall in for that crap.
I know you've been working with an architect on this beautiful idea. Tell listeners about that.
It's going to have wraparound services in the system, meeting people where they are as far as their housing situation goes. If they're comfortable in the tent, there's a little space over there for them to be in a tent. RVs, there's a space for RVs. There's going to be therapists there. The hardest problem that we're facing is land, trying to get land for this system to arise. Of course, we've got a lot of pushback from city, state, and federal government. They don't want to see that happen.
It took us 11 years. Once we already even got this small part of Mama Earth, it took 11 years because the city of Oakland blocked us at every turn with these permit gangsters. So I also just want to say that self-determination, like Wood Street Commons, like Homefulness, that is an act of revolution. For those of you young people who are looking to put your resources into liberation work, recognize that radically redistributing so that poor people can build self-determined movements, that is revolution. Tell listeners, Monty, about what's going on May 30th.
May 30th, that's our resource fair. It's also the day that they're shutting down the cabins, their solution to homelessness that is now once again threat of being evicted. On that day, they will be evicted. But we're going to be there. I mean, that's our brothers. That's our sisters. That's our blood. That's where my life began. I got a new life there. Okay. So, yeah, we're going to have a resource fair that day.
So, listen, relatives, you need to show up. Are you still letting people have tables? Is there space
for that? Of course. They can reach us at woodstreetcommons.org. Okay. They would like the table there.
What I wanted to turn to now is we have Brother Robbie. Robbie, welcome to Poor People's Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Robbie, can you tell listeners what's happening in Coast Miwok, occupied Coast Miwok lands, a.k.a. San Rafael, with houseless relatives?
Right now, thinking of Novato, we've had Camp Compassion for the last 5 years. And Camp Compassion came out of a struggle during COVID-19 where camp at Lee Gerner Park was swept on multiple occasions, and people came together, fought back, and we ultimately unionized with the California Homeless Union and sued the city and got a settlement where we basically got almost what could be considered a lease to the park for almost 2 years. And so during the time that Camp Compassion was at Lee Gerner Park, almost 40 people got housed. It was just a self-governed space, and police couldn't come into the camp unless there was, you know, probable cause. There's a lot of ownership, and people were able to use that as a stepping stone to really move forward their lives. And unfortunately, there was a fire in July, and after that, the city basically terminated the program, the settlement agreement. But Camp Compassion is still together, so even though they closed it down before they come and sweep everybody, we actually came together as a community. We got the U-Haul trucks, and we moved out to a new location, which we're keeping kind of under the wraps right now. So Camp Compassion is still alive, and we're still trying to hold the city accountable, making sure that they don't try and evict people from the new location. We keep having stability. We have weekly Sunday dinners where we come out, feed the people.
I want to just say, people only associate so-called Marin County with extreme wealth hoarders. And I think that it's really important to tease it out for a second, that those wealth hoarders always have their servants. They have folks who are constantly working for them. And then they also have people that they throw away. There's no love in the life of a wealth hoarder for poor people. And not only that, but they actively want to unsee our bodies and our lives, which really is the same all across occupied Turtle Island. But to me, it's really extra, a little extra salt on the wound in places and spaces like that that have so much resources, but they won't just give you sovereign land. And I just wonder, Robbie, because, you know, we've been on and off working out there in so-called Marin County, because where else would it make sense to have a homefulness? You know, these people have money, they're falling over that kind of money. You know what I'm saying? And yet they can't possibly kick down some of their stolen and hoarded wealth so that the people who have nothing could have a sanctuary land. Against house keys, not handcuffs, sanctuaries, not sweep. Thank you, Robbie, so much. You can find Robbie Powelson on Facecrack or Instascam. You can also hit us up, and we will get you his info directly. Thank you, Robbie. We'll talk to you real soon.
Much love.
I need a dollar, dollar, dollar. That's what I need. Hey, hey. Well, I need a dollar, dollar, dollar. That's what I need. Hey, hey. Said I need a dollar, dollar, dollar. That's what I need. And if I share with you my story, would you share your dollar with me?
That's all for this broadcast of Poor People's Radio. You can follow us on Facebook, X, or Instagram at Poor Magazine, at Poverty Scala. You can also get this complete Poor People's Radio podcast with all the interviews and conversations or any of our previous archive shows on iTunes, Spotify, iHeart, or wherever you get your podcasts. All power to the people.
No roof, no guard. Under the freeway, lost in cold. Somebody's father left out alone. What mother could picture this sight? Her child forgotten, lost to the night. $1 billion homes lying the way. But for him, there's no shelter, no place to stay. What happens to us when we fall from grace?
Fall from grace.
When the world turns its back and we lose our place. Why do the evil people never ever die?
Die.
While the good ones suffer and ask the sky,
sky.
Is there no justice for the ones who cry? Will we ever rise? Will we ever thrive?
Sky.
As this old man shivers in the dead of night.
Hard night. Turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program, turn in for the real talk. Don't stop. EMN at it again. Sandman, Daddy Man, Chris Juwan Kim. Yeah. Innovation, stimulating ill conversation. Anything else, just imitation. Simulation, step into the zone. The Bay Area zone. Hard knock, radio, let's go. Big shout out to Davey D.
Yeah, right, feel me. Yeah.
Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kinda crazy though. Oakland, stand up.
Yeah. Stand up.
Ensemble, Big Night Woo.
Yeah. Kansas City.
Yeah. Yeah.
Help you. Come on, check out.
Why every novice think they hard knock when they ain't going all in and ain't paid the cost of the fee? Hating that they made they beats, trying to eat till they're ready for the steel grade beats. Say, please, maybe they'll save you a seat at the table with a great bread making a speech. Say, peace.
Talk Radio.
You and I rocking with the best in the West.
Yes, Coast. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
East Coast.
Greetings, I'm Ansa Craigland.
And I'm Winston Watson.
And I'm Donald Clark.
And we are The Meditation.
We are listening to Community Radio.
KBOO
90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon.
Yeah. Dig it.
This is Bird Note. Late spring and early summer are the peak of birdsong. And how do you go about learning to recognize the bird voices you hear? Well, Roger Torrey Peterson, the best-known American figure of 20th century birdwatching, offered this help. In his field guides, he often provided a catchphrase to identify a bird's song. For example, in the song of the common yellowthroat, he heard witchetty, witchetty, witchetty. What better way to capture the galloping cadence and crisp quality of his song? A male California quail song can be remembered as Chicago, Chicago, Chicago. The olive-sided flycatcher's distinctive whistled three-note song has been likened it to quick three beers. How about this one? This catchy song is often described as "See me, pretty, pretty me." If you hear this, you'll know a handsome white-crowned sparrow is nearby. In the East, you're more likely to hear the sweet, wavering song of the white-throated sparrow. It seems to say, "Oh, sweet Canada, Canada." Listen to all these songs again and find resources to help you bird by ear on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Portland. This is the Youth Randomonium.
I can't stop thinking. I'm hearing the fire.